Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Larison Danz, and today I am so happy to be welcoming back to the show Dr. PMH Atwater. And this is the third of a series of shows that we've had in the past few months. And today we're going to be talking about PMH's recently re-released book, an updated book, Future Memory. And I have to tell you that I have really appreciated this book. Sometimes, in fact, this is often the case. In fact, it's actually related, it can be related to what this book is all about. Sometimes books come about at the perfect time. And this particular book of PMH's is really explaining some things to me that have mystified me for many years. And I am just so happy to be entering in to what she calls the labyrinth that she presents within this very interesting book about how we can remember the future. But it's about much more than that. It's essentially about everything, this book. It encompasses a great many teachings. And let me tell you just a little bit more about PMH. PMH is one of the world's top researchers in near-death studies. And in past shows, we've talked about some of her books on NDEs, such as Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story, What They Teach Us About Living, Dying, and Our True Purpose. She personally experienced 3 NDEs in her life, and that will also come into play in our discussion of future memory today. PMH is a pioneer in this field. She is known internationally for her expertise on researching near-death experiences. She has completed 10 books on that topic, as well as additional books on other metaphysical topics. She also has spent time studying transformative states and many other spiritual topics. She has a real depth of wisdom in many areas, a depth and a breadth of wisdom. And it comes from many years of research and really what I think is just a natural curiosity and intuitive inclination to find the information, essentially. She seems to have a real knack for uncovering things and putting forth fascinating theories that explain the world around us and the universe and the multiverse. PMH has won many awards. She speaks around the world. She has been on so many television and radio programs. It's always an honor and a blessing to have her with us here on the Frontier Beyond Fear. She has been on Larry King Live. She's been on Regis and Kathy Lee, Geraldo, Coast to Coast AM. She's even lectured at the United Nations. And I really like that she also is an inspiration one-on-one by working as a prayer chaplain, and she's a spiritual counselor as well. Her website, which I will say right at the outset here, is pmhatwater.com, and she does have a free monthly newsletter there, so I encourage you, if you are fascinated like I am with the work that she's doing and has done throughout her life, you should go to her site, and there are many ways you can continue to be updated on all that she's doing. I do want to let people know who are listening. This show is also a teleconference, so should you ever be away from the computer while you're listening to the live show, all you have to do is call 310-807-5104. That's also the call-in number for questions if you ask to talk to the host. There's an option for that. And today we also have a live chat room open if you're listening live. And I do encourage people, if you have a question or a comment about the show, please feel free to use the podcast page, if you're listening in the future, as a blog, similar to a blog. Enter your comments there, and I think we would all welcome some discussion in that area. So without any more delay, I'm going to bring PMH here on the line. Hello, PMH. Welcome back.
Hi. It's good to be there.
Yes, it's always nice to have you on. And I have to say, what I said at the outset about future memory is so true. It was, I started reading it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is what's been happening to begin with. And I think right at the outset, I will tell you just my own perception of this phenomenon and help you to introduce it, because I have always thought throughout my life that I was just a really intense deja vu experiencer. That was how I labeled it in my head ever since. This goes all the way back. I mean, I can remember a really vivid one in my teens that really mystified me, too. And I just always said, oh, you know, I guess that's deja vu, you know, because I would say something to someone. They'd say, oh, that's deja vu. And it's like, oh, okay. So from the outset, PMH, I want you to define for us, because I think this is a real confusing point for many people, what is the difference? Well, define future memory, and what is the difference between future memory and what we all have come to think of as déjà vu?
Well, déjà vu is past-oriented. Future memory, of course, is future-oriented, but future as related to it's already happened, so what you're getting is the past. So it's a little different in that regard. You know, there's lots of different ways of regarding the future. You know, there's prophecy, to predict in advance. There's forecasting, which is certainly a business objective way of looking into the future. There's precognition, that's to know in advance. There's clairvoyance, to see beyond sight. And there's clairaudience, to hear beyond sound. And then, of course, we have déjà vu, but déjà vu is always, you know, really, really past-oriented. It's not the future, it's always the past. How I split the bean here, if you're looking at a little bean and you're going to take a knife, how I split that bean is, future memory is to prelive in advance what has not happened, or, you know, it just simply hasn't happened at all. You've never thought about it. Nobody else has thought about it. And all of a sudden, you find yourself living. Now, with future memory, it's not a flash. It's not a knowing. It's not just a viewing. You are literally living it in advance. Every detail of that living, every part and particle of that living, going to the toilet, going to the bank, writing things down.
Every little thing.
Yeah, all the aspects of daily life, you suddenly enter into and start living that. And then when it's over, when the episode is over, then that's that startle effect, like what happened. You know, there really is a pattern to how these tend to occur.
Uh-huh.
And there's usually a physical sensation when they start, when they begin, often coupled by a rush of heat or tingles or, you know, somehow you have this sensation that something is about to occur or something is happening, sort of catches your attention. Some people hear a ringing sound in their ears, or they feel like they're bursting out of the top of their head. You know, with everybody it's different, but there's always some kind of physical sensation. Because there is a physical sensation, I want to underscore this, that tells you something very real is happening in your brain.
Yes.
That has to do with chemicals. So you know right away the brain is involved. This is not your imagination. This is you're not being clever. Okay, something real is going on. For most people, present time and space relationships freeze in place. In other words, what you're doing right now freezes in place. Time and space change. There's a definite feeling of expansion. Somehow, some way, life around you, the air, you know, space, everything is expanding. It's becoming larger, stronger, more knowing. You know, the space itself expands and everything else with it. Suddenly, the future memory episode begins to happen. And you're living it. And while you're living it, it's virtually impossible to tell that it's anything any different than what you were doing before. I mean,
yes.
You just start living the episode, you go through the episode, and there's no clue. There's no clue that this is different. It's part of life. And when time-space relationships resume back to normal activity, the scenario ends as quickly as it began, and time and space return to their normal states of being, and there's always or almost always some kind of resolution in that those chemicals again. There is some kind of feeling or tingle or chill or scare or sense that something's happened here.
Yes.
You know, you're filled with mystery and awe. What was this? Something happened and it's gone. A lot of people will keep it in memory for a while, puzzling, what is this?
Yes.
And then eventually they'll forget it. But the interesting thing about future memory that I've found is that eventually what you pre-lived will happen. Let me give you an example of what happened to me.
This was a
sunny morning, and my husband and I were sitting in our breakfast nook, and he was reading the paper, and I was just eating the rest of my breakfast, when suddenly I heard the phone ring. Now, the phone is in our kitchen. We're in the breakfast nook. So I get up, I go answer the phone, and on the phone is this guy my husband's business was bringing into town. He came from New York City. They were bringing him down to sort of rev up the real estate business my husband was in to attract more people to the sites of these homes. And so he was coming into town, and he wanted, I had some time on my hands, no job at that moment. So I thought, okay, I'll just be kind of like, I'd stand on a street corner and pass out flyers. So he was saying, everybody's going to meet that night at a certain time at Howard Johnson's restaurant. And that he would, we would all get together and he would teach us and tell us what we were going to do. So I said, thank you very much, and I'll be there. And then I went about my day's activities of cleaning and vacuuming and just doing my daily chores, and thought nothing of it.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly the episode was over, and I'm still sitting at the kitchen table. I did not go anywhere. And I'm going, blink, 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 wait a minute, woo, woo.
Uh-huh.
There's that chill, there's that feeling like, woo, what just happened? So I pulled down my husband's newspaper, he's still reading the newspaper, and I said, did you hear the phone ring? He said, no. Did you hear me get up and go answer the phone and do vacuum or anything? He says, no, you've just been sitting there eating breakfast. And then you do a double blink. And so I sort of went on with the day's activities and the next day's activities and the next day's activities, sort of like wondering what was that. And then I just kind of forgot it. You know, what do you do with something that you can't place anywhere in your mind? You know, you just kind of flip it out, or you put it in some kind of back corridor of your mind. So I'm on. So a week later, the phone rings. I go running to the phone, and there's this guy from New York, and he's calling. He's saying, I'm finally in town. I want everybody that might hand out flyers or help me in any way to gather at Howard Johnson's tonight. I'm going to tell you all about it. And so I busied myself vacuuming and cleaning house, excuse me, and getting ready, and then I drove to Howard Johnson's. And I parked the car. Also, as part of the original episode, when I was at Howard Johnson's, I saw him enter through the big front doors surrounded by a bevy of women.
Yes.
So when it's actually happening and I'm at Howard Johnson's and I walk in, I don't see him anywhere. And so I'm looking all over Howard Johnson's and I don't find the guy. And then it hits me. I've done this before. I've already been here. I've already done this. And when I turn around, he's going to be walking in through those glass doors surrounded by a bevy of women. So I just stood there and laughed before I turned around. So I turned around with great relish because I was enjoying this at this time.
And you knew what was going to happen.
And sure enough, he walks in the glass doors surrounded by a bevy of women. So I march right up to him and look at him eyeball to eyeball, and I say, okay, I'm ready to go for our instruction tonight about handing out flyers. I kid you not, that man went instantly white. He backed up. He wouldn't have anything to do with me.
Oh my.
And he said, there is no way you can know who I am or what I look like.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that must have been.
And that
something.
Wasn't part of my future memory episode. And do you know, for the 3 months I worked with this guy, he would never sit on the same side of the room I was on. He would never get close to me. I guess he thought I was some kind of witch or spooky person or something. I don't know.
People can get really afraid of
that kind of thing.
I've encountered
alarmed.
It myself. Yes.
Yeah, he was alarmed.
It's just outside of how they want to perceive reality, I think. I think that's why people get so afraid. And actually, you address this later in your book as well, to how we perceive reality. But, you know, I want to revisit something because I'll tell you, again, back to this, you know, the words we use to define things. And I suppose sometimes what we think of as deja vu is deja vu. I know I'm returning to this because I'm beginning to think that maybe some of us mislabel it because we don't have a term for it. And when we ask someone about it, they use, you know, it's that deja vu term that gets used. And yet I'm beginning to wonder if it gets applied to more things. Deja vu. It's something else. And I had one as a teen, PMH, that mystified me for years. I did not put this one out of my mind. I couldn't figure it out because I was working in a store and these kids were teasing me. I was a geeky kid at that age. I was one of these geeky girls, glasses, stringy hair, kind of not... just geeky, okay? I was a smart girl, you know, that stereotype in those days.
Uh-huh.
I'm working in a store, and these kids, this boy starts calling me a dog in a very specific way, like really mockingly out from the mall while I'm in the store. And I experienced the whole thing. Then, you know, I experienced it again, the same thing. I mean, the same thing, just like you described. Every element. You know, it wasn't the same kid mocking me twice. You know, he came back to mock me another day. It wasn't that. It was the same scenario. And I think it stuck in my mind because it was such a hurtful thing that this mm-hmm. person was, you know, being mean to me, another teen. And I lived it twice. And it stayed with me for a very long time. And it was not only hurtful because of what happened, because at that age I was self-conscious and felt, you know, I didn't really want to be a geeky girl necessarily, but I know it happened that way, and I was mystified. I mean, how could this be? And, you know, I can't say it happened all the time, but I've had this happen other times.
Yeah.
And not
right.
really knowing what the
mm-hmm.
heck is this? Because you're right, it's different. I mean, you can really remember that you went through this before. It's like, wait a second, this already happened. I mean, not just deja vu. You know, this whole term deja vu, and I might have even asked someone about it at the time, and they said, oh, you know, that's just deja vu. Don't worry about it. But I don't think so. I mean, anyway,
no.
I'm just wondering how many people
different.
Out there. Yes, it is distinctly different, and if I remember, and I know you'll talk more of this, I was trying to think back, PMH, did I remember something weird? I do remember it was very quiet in the store. It was like, did I see sparkles? I don't know. I know you talk about this concept of seeing sparkles.
Some people do, yeah.
Yeah,
some
I don't
do,
remember
don't.
That, but I remember it being strangely quiet. You know, unrealistically quiet,
okay.
as if you're standing outside. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because as I'm thinking about our audience listening out there, I'm thinking, you know what? I bet there are more people out there that have had this experience and never knew how to place it. And maybe
well,
they
I'd
did
like
just
to give
dismiss
some more
it.
Examples.
Yes, please
let's
do.
Just
go on. Go
examples
on and give some
that
some
will
more.
Sort of confuse people even more.
Yes.
One is a retired military officer. And he would have future memory episodes, that is to say, he would live in advance going to a grocery store and being in the line to purchase his items, and he would look up and down the row of cashiers who have these automated digital little screens that are up high so you can see, you know, the purchases being made and how much it costs. And so he's looking down the line, and he sees the cost of each item down the line. And then when he actually goes to the grocery store, it happens. He's standing there. He's waiting for his purchases to be rung up. And he looks down the line, and it will be the exact items for the exact price that he pre-lived maybe days before. And so I ask him about this because, you know, that sounds boring. Or, you know, why would
yes,
this something like
mundane.
This happen to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is hardly the stuff of ghost stories, you know.
Yes.
I mean, this is just everyday almost nonsense. And he says, you know, he said, after a while of this kind of thing, he said, I just became very comfortable. And I just became very comfortable with the natural flow of life because I considered this natural for me, and it was okay. It helped me to feel comfortable in my own body. It helped me to feel comfortable in my own life. It helped me to know that everything was ordered and I'm okay.
Yes.
Now, that's one example. Let me give you another one. This is from Seattle,
yes.
Washington. This is a woman. Married, several kids. She's standing at the kitchen sink, and she's doing dishes. In those days, people really did dishes. Yeah, so she's standing at the sink doing dishes. And she's looking out the window, and suddenly she pre-lives her husband calling on the phone, No, I think he came home. He came home and told her he had to go to a meeting that night. And when he went to that meeting, there was an accident, and he told her the car. And this episode, what she pre-lived, what she saw happening, caused her a great deal of fear.
Yes.
So when he came home that night and said, and it was that night, when he came home that night and said he had to go to a meeting, she drove. There was no accident. So she thought, aha, I beat it. You know, it was just worry. It was no problem. You know, I beat this from happening. A week later, he suddenly had to attend another meeting. This time, he didn't have an opportunity to call her in advance. He went to the meeting. There was an accident, and he totaled the car. She was very upset about this.
Yeah.
She said, I thought I could prevent it from happening, and I found out I could not prevent it. I could not intercede. So the many, many, many hundreds of people I spoke with, some of them said they could intercede, that it did change, and other people said, no, they couldn't intercede. Most of them said they couldn't intercede. They could somehow alter it a little bit, but they couldn't intercede. And the one thing that interested me the most, especially with near-death experiencers, and we're talking about thousands of people here, both adults and children, what interested me the most was that this seemed to be a natural after effect of the near-death experience. Like people began to have these kinds of experiences after having had a near-death episode, and that these kinds of experiences, believe it or not, were deemed helpful because it took them to the point where they began to realize that life is orderly, it is good. You know, I asked these people, what do you think this stuff is for? And they began to give the same kind of answers. Pre-happenings, and that's what they'd call them. Pre-happenings. Pre-happenings are previews. They enable you to see ahead and give you extra time to get to prepare yourself. Some of them call them advanced practice sessions. Some of them call them learning experiences. Some of them call them a chance to experiment with other possibilities in living. Some of them said it was a window to their own future. Almost all of them got to that point where it became a natural, easy part of their life, that it enabled them to rehearse what was going to happen before it happened, so they were ready, so they weren't upset. They began to flow into this kind of thing, and it just became a very natural and orderly part of their life. And I noticed that when that happened, when it reached the point where it became common and ordinary and they were comfortable with it, they had less and less episodes. And they got to the point eventually where they seldom had an episode like this again. And that's when everything in my mind and my brain went, boom! You know, wait a minute here, folks.
Yes.
This isn't just metaphysics. This isn't psychic. This isn't intuitive. This isn't some kind of psychic phenomena. Wait a minute here. Whoa, team. So I started doing a lot of looking. And what I discovered was children between the ages of 3 to 5, especially around the age of 4, children play with futuristic possibilities as a way of getting ready they rehearse in advance demands soon to be made upon them. Look at child's play. A child will spend, the average child will spend about two-thirds of their day in the future. This is natural for,
yes.
This is science. A child will spend most of their day in the future. We say, oh, isn't that cute? The little kid is acting out a fairy story or a cowboy or, you know, they're going to be a nurse. So they're acting out all these things. What they're doing is, literally, they are rehearsing. They have no understanding, really, of time-space states, about future, about now. This is how they establish the validity of action, reaction, or future. And when I looked at all these reports and all these papers and read them all, I thought, whoa, stop here, whoa. Look again at the number of people who report these kinds of cases. And I'm speaking now of adults,
yes.
Even teenagers. Usually there are people who've gone through a near-death experience or their consciousness is changing or they've gone through some kind of spiritual experience or somehow their intuitive and psychic abilities are altering in some way. There's some kind of change that they're going through that's quite significant. Invariably, people in that kind of mode or that, you know, part of their life, invariably they will begin to pre-experience the future before it happens. Whether it's clairvoyance, whether it's precognition, whether it's through audio effects, doesn't matter. Or future memory episodes. They will start tuning into the future and experiencing the future or knowing the future before it occurs. This is so significant that this is one of the things I look for to tell whether a person has really gone through a transformation of consciousness or is in the process of going through one. If they become more futuristic oriented, or if they start having more future kinds of states of one kind or another, this tells me then that what they're going through is real, that it is altering their physical body as well as the inner emotional spiritual body.
Yes.
Children go through, this is a natural process for children for temporal lobe development. It's a natural part of temporal lobe development. What I'm looking at with what I call brain shift experiencers, it's a natural temporal lobe expansion. This is what we see is temporal lobe expansion that happens in people who are enlarging their consciousness. With kids, it's emerging consciousness. With adults or teens, it's enlarging consciousness. With kids, it's the birth of imagination. With adults, it's the rebirth of imagination. And it is so significant that that it tells me that we human beings, when we are adapting, when we are evolving, we flip back to the states we had when we were children doing the same thing so we can go through the same natural process which will enable us then to mature, be more comfortable, feel better about what is happening to us now. you know, I look at that and I'm so in awe that our body, our brain, our mind knows exactly what to do.
Yes.
You know, when we need to reorient, we're going to go back to those same processes that enable us to orient ourselves as children. We do that again as adults and teens to reorient ourselves, because we've got to have that grounding or we will flip out.
You know, I have a question about the children, PMH, and this actually may relate to some of your other work as well. You know, nowadays, we don't let our children often imagine and have spaces of just open time. A lot of parents just place their kids in front of some electronic game or the television or something like that. And my question for you here is, are we disabling the process in a way by not giving our young kids or our grandkids, depending on how old we are, that space to play in this space?
Yes,
we are. That's what I'm thinking
as
you're talking about.
Yes, we could be doing a million times real harm
in our society.
Educators are seeing this. Scientists are seeing this. Doctors are seeing this. Kids psychologists are seeing this. Yes, this is the natural process. In other words, if all you're using is screen technology or digital technology, you miss hands-on. The brain is so built that you have to do hands-on. You have to experience things bodily in order to physically set up the structures in your brain and processes in your brain that will enable you to mature and be a healthy person. If you skip those, and this is what we're seeing now, if you skip those, then we've got children who are brilliant, but they don't know how to reason.
Yeah.
They don't know how to invent. They have no idea. They don't know what nature is. They don't know what emotions are. They don't know how to feel with their hands.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the reasons why I wrote the book Children of the Fifth World, is to really kind of wave a red flag here in the face of anybody willing to look and say, wait a minute here, whoops. This, you know, the digital age is wonderful. It's here to stay. We've got to learn ways of handling that, or we're going to lose our kids. They're going to be brilliant dummies.
And I feel like, you know, how it so much relates here is that if we're filling their head with a constant barrage of input from the television or from an electronic game at a young age, often, you know, these kids are, you know, starting at practically birth, but at the age of four, perhaps, when they might be experiencing their own future and developing their temporal lobe in such a way, as you say, if we bypass that, these kids are going to miss out on that experience as well. I mean, I really see the linkage here, that there's something so important there that we're missing. And I wonder, PMH, even as adults, you know, you speak of you know, how we used to wash dishes and things like that. You know, those are times of quiet. You know, I have found as a parent or as a mother or whatever, as a house cleaner, that some of my most meditative times are when I'm cleaning. I can, you know, cleaning the bathroom or something. And yet, we barrage ourselves. Yes, it's true. I've laughed about that many times. That I've even told people, don't you dare clean the kitchen. Because I need to do it tonight. I'm serious. I did that just the other night. Someone was starting to, you know, very nicely. I was getting help in the kitchen, and I said, no, I actually need to do that tonight. And they get that. You know, they get mom by now that I'm strange in that way. But I guess what I'm getting at is even as adults, we fill our minds all the time. We're barraged constantly, like the TV is on, or you know, we're playing these, a lot of adults are playing these games too. I mean, this gaming thing is taking over
a bunch of
people.
The gaming thing is wonderful, but we tend to carry it too far.
Yeah, and
you know, we tend to carry it too far. One of the lovely things. Yeah, one of the lovely things we did in our kitchen when we remodeled it, we had the dishwasher removed, and in its place we put in a Lazy Susan. And we love that Lazy Susan, you know, put your pots and pans in and everything.
Yeah.
Because it's always right there. You can find it without having to bend over like a pretzel. And I'm always doing dishes at the sink because I value the skin time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want all of those stimuluses in the palms of my hand and the fingers of my hand. You know, the differences in temperature and bubbles and feeling the contours of the dishes, that is so valuable. You know, just that. I mean, aside from sitting down to meditate, just doing dishes at the sink is one of the healthiest things you can do.
I believe it, and I think that, you know, some of these, I'm also thinking as you talk about this experience of future events, I wonder if sometimes people have labeled that as visions, you know, because I have often heard it said that visions can be experienced, you know, not just seen, and actually I've experienced that to a degree myself. They're not just, and I wonder if that's another way people have approached this phenomenon, by
she's
having a vision.
It's fair to say that. And so how do you judge? How do you know? Well, the way I knew, and the way most people that I've talked with knew, is because they were physically busy.
Yeah.
And again, that's one of the keynoters, that's one of the signature features of a future memory episode. You're not passive.
Yeah.
You are wide awake and you're doing something physical. So you're not passive in any way. You're not dreaming, you're not meditating, you're not being subjective. Rather, you're being objective. And so this is one of the things that I truly feel is that we really need to clue in on and recognize that we human beings are literally built. We are made to have these kinds of experiences, to go through transformative states. You know, we have all the equipment, most of us do, that we're born with to procreate. But we also have all the equipment we need to recreate. And we can recreate ourselves. And certainly a lot of my work has focused on that because I noticed elements of what I call a second birth. With children who go through a near-death state and with teenagers and adults who go through a near-death state. You know, with kids, for instance, the learning curve can reverse itself, placing abstract concepts before foundational understanding. IQ enhancements and faculty extensions can accompany heightened spatial, nonverbal, sensory dynamic thinking, giving rise to creative problem solving. You know, we sense in multiples. If we look more at adults, these sensing multiples can open up whole new worlds of possibility. You know, the temporal lobes are very much involved here. The nervous system is very much involved here. I really feel that the higher mind can emerge as the higher brain develops, thanks to the kind of structural and chemical and electrical changes that occur in the brain organ. So, you know, when we're talking about, wow, you know, such interesting episodes of being able to live the future before it occurs, we're really talking about structural changes in the brain and how the brain is adapting to be able to invite in, to encompass, to be able to handle higher and higher states of consciousness. This is all physical. And, it's just not, nobody, you didn't make it up.
No, you know you didn't. You can prove it. And, I know you talk into your,
this
in your book as well.
This isn't channeling, folks.
Right. What about synchronicities?
what
about synchronicities, PMH? Now, I will say, and I know you give some excellent examples. To me, there is no greater proof of the supernatural, and it's personal proof. In fact, there's a quote somewhere in your book that is so true, where someone says, and I've said this to other people, if you really want to know if the supernatural, what we call the supernatural, I think it's just the natural, is real, you experience it for yourself, because you will prove it to yourself. And synchronicity, to me, is the greatest proof, because I can hold it in front of me. I can hold up a book that just showed up at the perfect time and show it to someone even, or show it to myself, that, what are the statistical chances of certain things occurring? Usually they're astronomical. So anyway, I know you speak of the flow and
sure,
synchronicity within your book.
Yeah. My husband was studying mediation techniques.
Uh-huh.
And just at the moment that he needed some extra help to better understand what he was reading, he flipped on the radio, and there was a speaker talking about mediation techniques that began to describe exactly what he needed to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's synchronicity. And it happens all the time. Really, synchronicity is a flow state. We've got flow states that are internal to us. We've got flow states that are external to us. I consider synchronicity an external flow state.
Yeah.
The internal, you've got the subjective environment, then external is the objective environment. Internal is without a focus. External is more in focus. Internal is the release of thoughts. The external is the release of goals and vested interests. Internal stimuli fades away. Externally, stimuli actually increases in clarity. If we're talking about internal, you blank out into nothing. You're having an internal flow state.
Yeah.
But with an external one, you perk up to new possibilities. So the internal, consciousness expands. The external, experience expands. Internal, the mind flows. External, the life flows. Internally, you know more. Externally, you do more. Internally, you gain information. Externally, you gain harmony and an orderly rhythm to life experiences. Internally, it's unity and consciousness. It's a state of mind. Externally, it's unity with the world at large, a state of being. So we're always having flow states if we're in that process of becoming more consciously aware. We're certainly more schooled on the internal flow states. There's been a lot of books written about them and how handy they are, especially with problem solving, blank that mind out into nothingness. Just flow, just sort of be there and don't do anything. And the next thing you know, the answer that you want just pops right in. But we don't pay that much attention to how life can flow. And that's synchronicity. These things just flow together and pop together, and there's greater clarity. There's greater knowingness and vision. You get more done. It's really handy when you're trying to do anything. You get a lot more done. You know more. Life just takes off. And it there's this flow state in the sense that there's harmony in your life.
Yes. You know, I'll tell you something about synchronicity. Years ago, when I was coming out of being an evangelical Christian or really in a lot of doubt about a lot of things, and I had this dramatic spiritual emergence, all these synchronicities started happening. And I didn't, at first I was in wonder. I mean, I thought, oh my gosh, it's God. You know, I swear, I almost fell to my, I think I might have fallen to my knees at one point because, you know, I was, that's how I was trained to relate to God.
Well,
I mean, it was God.
Deal.
It was God. And I have since learned, although I never experienced it in evangelical Christianity, they have a lot of synchronicities too, especially charismatic Christians. They, you know, if they're really into the love. Now, one of the things that I saw on my path in this heightened state is if you fall into fear, because at one point I got afraid, PMH, because I had been trained that, you know, this might be signs and wonders, you know, which are demonic or scary.
Right. And
that, suddenly
then it
they got skewed. Well, not only did they stop, they shifted into fear-based. Thing.
Right.
And then you can really go in a spiral because you're starting to see things that are frightening. And actually that is what happened to me until I kind of pulled my, I mean, I managed to get out of it, but it can be it's an interesting place that I've thought about, I've wondered about. But, you know, since then, when I'm in a better spot spiritually and love-wise, I mean, they can be wonderfully comforting. In fact, if they disappeared from my life tomorrow, I would miss it. I mean, the world is transformed. I mean, I can't imagine the world without synchronicity. How about you, PMH? Can you imagine your life now without synchronicity? It would be like you're not even living. I mean, you know, a friend of mine said to me, we were talking about, he sees tons of, this is my significant other, he sees tons of them. And he said to me this morning, he chooses to live a magical life. And that, I just, that really struck me because it's like that. It's like, you know, it's a different kind of life. And in my case, it never really turned on until I had the spiritual emergence, or actually it became an emergency when I fell into fear. That's what happened to me, PMH.
Right.
It was pretty difficult. But then
well,
it
you're
did
going
go to
through
a good
a brain
place.
Shift.
Yes,
and
I
brain
did. And,
shifts
and there
are difficult.
Yes, and it was
they
challenging, but I welcome it all. You know, every part of it happened for a reason. And,
but, you know, people who are happy and are at peace with their life experience synchronicities all the time.
Yes.
It's a natural part of everyday living if you are in harmony with yourself.
Yes.
And people who are happy and who are joyful have more psychic experiences than people who are apprehensive.
Isn't that interesting? Because that's our natural...
It's our natural state.
We're gravitating to the love that binds us together, and I feel that you know, if more of us could be in that place, and I think more and more of us are. I think that's part of the shift.
Well, we're getting
on the
there.
Planet.
You know, the tricky thing in all of this is we recognize only what we are prepared in advance to see.
Yes.
Think about that. We're talking about perceptual prejudice here. We
yes.
recognize only what we are prepared in advance to see. Let me give you a striking example of that. And this was several decades ago that this occurred. It was in California. I'm not sure what. I think in Northern California, but I'm not sure. Some scientists went down to South America, and they were with the indigenous tribes, and they asked a couple of them. I think it was Berkeley. And they asked them to come up and be exposed to the world, you know,
yes.
exposed to a big city, fly in an airplane, and you know, walk on sidewalk and come here to Berkeley and you know, experience our side of life. And they got some adventurous fellows, about two or three of them that came, and they flew in a plane. Of course, that was very traumatic.
Yeah, and
of course, they talked to him all the time and showed him pictures and talked him through the event. The plane lands, and you get your luggage, and you're in a car. And of course, that was just like, whoa, what's a car? And you know, all these things. And finally, got them to the point where they were kind of settled down, and they realized this is a different world. They saw all these pictures, and so they were in the, I think, the campus area of Berkeley. And they were all walking along. They were walking along the sidewalk. And there were cyclists that were also using this sidewalk. And these indigenous people would walk right into the bicyclist. They would walk right into it. They wouldn't walk to either side. They would walk right into it. And so our friendly scientist friends right away were wondering, what gives here? They're walking into a cyclist instead of walking away or to one side. And they came to see and recognize that these people were not prepared in advance for a bicycle. They'd prepared them for a lot of things, but they forgot about the bicycle. And because they were not prepared in advance, because they didn't know there was such a thing as a bicycle, they literally could not physically see it.
Yes.
And that became a part of a really big scientific study that was done. This idea of perceptual prejudice. We recognize in advance only what we are prepared to see. And you all know this in your everyday life. You hear a word for the first time. It's that, oh, there's this word, and this is what it means. And then after that, you'll hear that word again and again and again.
That's true.
And you would have never heard it. I mean, you never heard it at all until this one time it caught your attention. Then you learned about it. And then after that, you heard it again and again and again.
Yeah.
We all face things like that, whether it's part of our belief system, whether it's part of marriage, whether it's part of sex, whether it's part of touching each other, whether it's part of talking to each other on the job, whatever. If you've not seen it before, if you don't know that it exists, if you have no idea that anything like this could be a part of the world,
yes,
you will not see it.
Isn't it true? I know this is in What the Bleep, and I've heard this story in other places too, where the indigenous peoples, when the Spaniards were out on the ocean, or I guess they arrived first, you know, they saw the ships out there, but they didn't see the ships because they couldn't see the ships. Only the shaman apparently saw the ships.
Yeah,
but the other people could not see them. They didn't know what it was.
Yeah, but the shaman saw it as a cloud. The people didn't see it at all. The shaman saw it as a cloud.
Yes, because it wasn't
the ships landed, and these people could go up and touch it. And you know, that's wood. You know, that's made of wood. That comes from trees. That's wood. And slowly but surely, they could make a place in their lives and in their vision and in their brain for something like a SHIP, a ship.
Yeah,
they could be learning it like a little 2 and 3 year old would. SHIP, this is a ship. This is what a ship looks like. You know, you're back to, kindergarten. And until you until you have some semblance of what something is, you won't know that it's there. And that's what it catches so many people who are judgmental or fundamentalist. They're good people. They're wonderful people.
Yes, I grew up with
but,
I mean,
know,
I'm, many in my
people.
Family are still
yeah,
are still evangelical.
Wrong with
absolutely. Yes, wonderful,
but,
loving.
Right.
And yes,
but because they don't know that this exists,
yes,
they don't think that it does.
Well, and there's
they
a way
they can't accept something.
Yeah, and you often will see things the way you were taught. Like for me, I mean, perfect example, when I was seeing something that was actually very love-based, I had been taught, you know, there could be counterfeit love or, you know, all this deception. Boy, all those teachings about deception and how we can be deceived in our perception, that those can really skew broader experiences. And it's actually, I view that as part of my path in the world is to work on that area as well. It's just that, you know, when you come at some of these things with a fear-based perspective, you will see things in a fear-based way. I mean, and
yeah.
It can cause trouble when we're opening up because, you know, you may not see what's right in front of you, that it's really love-based, it really is of God, even if it's not exactly what you were taught. It, you know, how do you begin to trust that, you know, this thing, whatever it is, that's outside of the dogma, is of God? And I think that there's a quote in your verse, or in your verse, I'm talking about religion, where you talk about there are two religions on earth. One is of love,
there's only two.
And one is of fear. And oh,
that's a really good line.
Yep. That is such a good way of expressing
it.
And we bounce between them sometimes. You know,
yeah.
I know evangelicals can be fully in that space of love. And actually, I have known plenty of New Agers, using that term very
loosely, sure,
who can be
no
in the
difference.
Space of fear. We can all do it. Yes, it's true. And we need to, I love how we can have an awareness. We can be on that spectrum. I mean, that's part of my experience is that after reading that, I'm really going to keep that as something that I hold on to because I'll think to myself, okay, what religion am I following today?
No,
in this moment. I don't want to be in that fear place. You know, I think I prefer to be in the love one. I really like that.
Yeah, and I would like at this point to really talk about the book Future
yes,
Memory.
Please do. We've
because
talked
the
for
book
hours.
Isn't a book. You know, I mean, we can talk
well,
all we want about what's in
it,
but it. Yeah,
yes.
All we've
please
been
do.
Doing is just sort of scratching the surface.
Oh,
so let's talk about the book Future Memory.
Yes, please.
When I said the book is not a book, it really isn't.
Yes.
It may look like one. It may seem like one. But it's not. It's a labyrinth. Every sentence, every paragraph, every page is part of the math I used to construct that format.
Yeah.
You read through the book like you would walk through a sight labyrinth. You enter through the mouth, which is the beginning of the book. You stay on the path. If you skip around the book or you read the last first, you will wonder why I ever wrote such a dumb book, because it will not hold together. You have to stay on the path. Now,
yeah.
Just like in a real labyrinth, that path is going to turn on you. It's going to turn on you again and again. It's going to curve around, just like a real labyrinth does. The purpose of the book, once you read through it, is to bring your consciousness up to the next highest level possible for you at that time. Any labyrinth does that. That's why labyrinths are healers. When you walk through a labyrinth, it calms you. it opens up pathways in you that you didn't think were there. It helps you to put things together and answer questions. It enables you to sort of flow into the inner reaches of your being. It unlocks the mind and enables the mind to then rise. So any labyrinth, whether it's a sight labyrinth, a finger labyrinth, any kind of labyrinth does this. This is what this book is. It is a labyrinth. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the history of the book.
Please do.
Future Memory is book two of the three specific types of books that I was told to write during my third near-death experience by that voice I call the voice like none other. My sense is that voice is of God, and that voice told me to write three specific books. Future Memory is book two. That voice named the book. Now, in the process of you know, dealing with all the research I've dealt with and all my findings and observations and, you know, putting out books and papers and all these things you do as a researcher, I began to work on Future Memory.
Yes.
And I wrote it a total of six times. Now, I didn't just write it six times. I wrote it in six different formats. Because most of my books, almost all of my books, go out for peer review before they go to a publisher. So this book went out for peer review. And all of the people who read it said, well, this is a very interesting book, but what is it you're saying? They didn't get it. And so after the sixth one, it was a really bright day. It was, I think it was a Saturday morning. I was upstairs. I was taking a shower. My husband was in his bathroom. I was in the shower room. I was taking a shower. And I had decided at that time that I would just burn it. You know, I decided that obviously I just wrote this book for myself.
Yes.
And, you know, it's time to just junk it, burn it, get rid of
yeah.
it. Because
yeah.
I'm not going to fool around with this book anymore. And
uh-huh.
and I got my leg halfway out of the shower. And suddenly, time and space stop. Everything expands. And I have one of these kind of episodes. Only this time, I heard this voice. It was only the second time it's ever spoken to me. It's never spoken to me since.
Uh-huh.
But this was the second time. And that voice said, turn it into a labyrinth. I will show you how. So I thought, wow. You know, when everything returns to time and space and the sparkles disappear, I'm going, wow. Of course, the first thing my husband's name is Terry, and I yell out to Terry, did you see anything? Did you hear anything? Of course he did not.
Of course not, yeah.
It just happened to me. So, I hurried downstairs as fast as I could to where the book was. In 2 weeks, I turned it around. It just flowed that easily once I got into the math. It just flowed together beautifully. It sold a week later. And it was picked up originally by Birch Lane Press and later on by Hampton Roads. Hampton Roads
yeah.
has it now. So there it is. The book is out there. It's a brain changer. That's what the book is. It's not just something you read. It's something you use to change your brain and to change your consciousness. And it works physically. It's not something that's that you think about or will, but rather it seems to be very physical in the way it actually works on people's brains and minds. I have some people
yeah.
that go back and read it like maybe once every 2 or 3 years, and they get another lift. It's actually a psychotronic device. It's just, you know, it's just not a book. And, yeah, I just put it out there, and people just keep it out there. You know, they keep reading the book and going back to the book again and again and again.
Yes.
Now, the book has a lot of little stories in it, has a lot of examples in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just heavy science in any way, shape,
true,
or form. That book is a page-turner.
It is.
And it has...
And it's like walking through it. It really is. You know, I rarely, and I have to tell you, honestly, I need to spend more time with it because it is not something to rush through. It is something, and I would have to say I had a lot of time to spend on about the first half, and then I didn't have as much time, and I wanted more time, you know, and I will have that. And it is a book that you want to, it's like going to the labyrinth, really. And as I was entering into it, PMH, and I say this very honestly, I don't say this as a, you know, just idle praise. I got, all of a sudden, I'm reading this book, and I thought, said to myself, I'm loving this book. And it was like you were walking on a path. You know how you're walking to the park or something, and you know,
uh-huh,
you're just really enjoying the walk. It was much like that, and I say this very honestly, and it was partly because I could relate to it, you know, because I was thinking, oh, you know, this is explaining something, like I'd said at the outset, but the more you talk about it, PMH, it's not just that. There's more to it than that. There's an indescribable part of it that you can't really put your finger on, but it's like walking, it is like walking a labyrinth in a way. It very much is, or it's an experience. And I feel that I do need to spend more time with it, and I would encourage people who do pick it up. This is a book that you're not going to want to just read and be done with or something. It's not that kind of book.
It's about time and space.
It's
about choice.
Not.
It's about perception.
It is.
But all of this is twirled around,
mm-hmm,
all kinds of little stories. I remember you said you loved the one about my kitchen stove.
Oh, yes.
And
please
all
do
that.
Tell the pickle story. It's about time. It's, you know, just the way that's an amazing story. I love your pickle story. So we can't not tell that one.
Well, let me be as brief as I can.
Yes.
I got very much into Edgar Cayce and the Edgar Cayce groups, and still am, really, because I really love what they do, the original readings that Edgar Cayce gave, and the way you can now challenge them, experiment with them, you know, verify them for yourself, or, you know, really question them, whatever you want to do. And I was in what was called, their study groups, their original study groups. And one of the things that we read about and talked about that often occurs in the Cayce readings, he would always say, there are three dimensions, time, space, and patience.
Yes.
Now, that's not a scientific reply.
No.
So you're sitting there saying to yourself, time, space, and patience? Wait a minute. Whoa. What is this man talking about? Patience can be a dimension. There are only three dimensions, time, space, and patience. You know, this sounded like utter ridiculousness to me. And then this one time, you know, I always, when I was, you know, a younger housewife, up into really almost my 40s, I raised and canned my own food, baked my own bread. I mean, I was really kind of like a homesteader. and I really canned a lot. I would can on the average of maybe 300 quarts and pints per year. And I mean, boy, I didn't buy hardly anything from a grocery store ever. And this one particular time, I was making sweet pickles. Now, I was a real connoisseur of making the perfect pickle, whether it's mm-hmm. a dill pickle or, you know, bread and butter pickles, sweet pickles, you know, and I found the secret for making the perfect sweet pickle, you know, that were crisp and crunchy and just gotcha with the flavor, you know,
yeah.
just the perfect sweet pickle. And I had this great big cast iron kettle that I used. And, you know, you go through these days, the pickle has to sit in this syrup, and then you drain it off, and you boil it up, and then you pour it back over the pickles again, and they sit again for a while, and then you drain off the syrup, and you add more sugar, and you boil it again, and you put it back on. This goes on for 14 days. Well, I made a 15-day sweet pickle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why my sweet pickles were so gourmet. I always did a 15-day sweet pickle. So it was the 15th day. I added the last remaining sugar. Those were in the days when I ate sugar.
Yes.
Don't do that now, but I did then. And the kettle was full. I mean, it was brimming with this really, really, really sweet syrup. And it was starting to boil. It has to boil. Yeah,
yes.
It's boiled like 3 minutes or something. And you have these big wooden spoons. And it was boiling. And I was sitting down at the kitchen table, if you can imagine, reading a book. Instead of
heaven
being
forbid.
Attentive. And guess what happened? Of course, this big, huge vat boiled over.
Yeah.
And I mean, it went through all the burners, down through the oven, down past the oven into the lower drawer, down past the lower drawer into the floor. I had sweet goo everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and I remember clearly what happened. I looked at that, and I went immediately into an in-between state, which is exactly what patience is. I went into that in-between state. It was sort of gauzy. It had a smell kind of like flat ozone.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very different kind of mind state. I walked into that state. And in that state, I became Superwoman.
Yes.
And I cleaned up that mess. I pulled that oven out, the stove out, you know, mopped up the floor. I cleaned out every burner, every wall, every speck, every particle, you know, saved as much as I could of the syrup and completed my pickles. I forget what time it was, like under 10 minutes or something like that. I don't remember.
I know
the
it was
exact.
Remarkable in the book. Yeah,
I think it was an unbelievable length of time.
Yeah, maybe
amazing.
It was
6 minutes. You know,
yeah,
I couldn't
something
remember.
Like that. It was amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
How
and
quickly.
I looked at
and
the
you
clock.
Thought it was 40. Yes.
Yeah. It seemed to me like 40 minutes had passed, but
yes.
only 6 had passed.
Yes.
And when I did that, I sat down with a bump on the chair because I was so shocked. And I thought, that's what Casey means. That's what it is. It's where you're in an in-between state where, let's see, how can I put this to you? Where everything is simultaneous. It's like time. It's like the track of a bullet. Let's say a bullet is going by. If you're in this state, you can reach out and you can pick up that bullet as it's streaking by. and you're uninjured and you're holding the bullet. It's where everything becomes simultaneous. Everything flows into itself, and there's no here, there's no there. Everything becomes simultaneous. And it's that state of simultaneity that is the in-between state. And it is that in-between state that miracles happen.
Yes. I have thought of it as transcending linear time. That's one way I've
thought about
it. No,
you don't transcend
anything. But it's not transcend. You're actually...
No,
You
walk into time and space.
So
you literally walk into it. And you discover that in-between state. There is a passageway, a portal, you can call it that, a dimension of consciousness that takes you into that in-between state. You're not here, you're not there. It's not time, it's not space. It's in between the two. How am I going to talk about
I see that. It's not to say that you transcend it.
Yeah, I didn't transcend the space.
Exactly. You just walked right. In a sense, you were there. So was it there already? Is that what you're trying to say? That
it's sort of like the zero point energy.
Yeah.
If you're going
to
be, if you're going
to
be a scientist, it's sort of like zero point energy. You walk into the zero.
Mm-hmm.
You're no longer in time. You're no longer in space. You're now in the in between, that zero. That zero point. And it is in that zero point, or that point of dark energy or dark matter, where the bulk of consciousness exists, where the bulk of the universe exists. It's that place where creation resides. It's that place where power resides. It's that place where the ultimate resides, the ultimate of the universe, the ultimate of us as co-creators with the Creator. It's where everything is simultaneous. There's no up, there's no down, there's no back, there's no forward.
What about this concept of oneness? And I know... I mean, it's everywhere, it's every when, I guess, and you feel, I mean, I know you speak of, there's a peace there, isn't there? The feeling, now when you're in that space, PMH, you're still you, right? I mean, you're still feeling that you are you, only more of you. Is that an accurate?
I don't know
like
how
you
to
said, you
that.
Became Superwoman. Well, I'm just trying to, I'm not trying to project on you. I'm just trying to understand better.
Right.
Did you feel, you felt like you were still experiencing this as PMH, but were you more than PMH?
I felt like I was doing something that was natural for me to do.
Yes.
I didn't feel like a savior. I didn't feel like a miracle woman. I didn't feel better or less. I felt like
cleaning.
I was doing something that was natural for me to do at the speed that was natural for me to do it.
Yeah.
I left time and space, and I flowed into the in-between. And that's what Casey meant when he talked about patience. Take a good look at patience. We consider it a virtue. If you're in a perfect state of patience, you have no concept of before or after. All you have is perfect patience. That is to say, it's all right. Everything is all right. Forgiveness is there. Everything is there because everything is all right. You can take on anything because it's all right. you're in that in-between state where there's no judgment, there's no expectation. It's almost like a state of suspension.
Yes. I love this concept. I have never heard it until I saw it in your book. I had not seen it before in anything. I hadn't, not being, you know, an expert on Casey and what he said, and I love this concept, PMH. It's a beautiful way of expressing, and I can't claim to have, I'm sure every one of us maybe has some concept of it, but the way you describe it, it's a powerful thing, and this is a very powerful concept. I kept thinking, you know, in a way, some people might call it, although this can be misinterpreted, a kind of state of grace, in the sense of everything is okay, like you say. You know, when we use that, and sometimes that term is misinterpreted, state of grace, but that's what popped into my mind as you're talking about it, because there's that feeling of everything is fine.
Yeah, it's the idea of grace.
That
everything is okay, that there's no problem here.
Yeah.
We think there's a problem, but there is no problem here.
Yes. Now, mentioning time.
You know, once you can understand suspension, and once you feel it, once you have been suspended, you never forget what that's like.
Yes.
Because, it's like, okay, the dimension of patience is actually the no thing at the heart of true creativity. It's that no thing, the seat of the collective whole in between time and space.
Yes.
You've entered that. Some people call it that holy space or that sacred space, How do you describe that? I mean, how do you use words to describe that?
And you know, my own experience, you know, it brings me back to my own spiritual emergence experience. I know that there was some of this there. I mean, I couldn't really explain it. And it was different, but there's something there. And, you know, I'm realizing, mentioning time, we're so caught up in the energy of this.
We're running out of time of the live show.
But it won't cut us off, as usual. We have a grace period after, but I did want to let live listeners know, and I know we are going to wrap up, but in case we get cut off as we're wrapping up, I just want to remind people that the book we're talking about is Future Memory, and it is more than a book, and also your website, pmhatwater.com, and your free monthly newsletter as well. You have a newsletter, is that true?
Yes. Had a news, you went out last week.
Yes. So those are the few things. And also, you know, I will be wrapping up with show notes and with you as well, and that if anyone is listening online and wants to continue to listen live, all you need to do is call 310-807-5104, and you need to do that in the next 2 minutes. You'll find your own dimension of patience, perhaps. and if you don't, it'll be in the podcast, our complete wrap-up. But I think we're drawing to a close here because, you know, I just wanted, as I always do, I tell you, PMH, I love where these conversations take us. When you're on the show, that in itself is an experience. Not only is your book an experience, but you take us on journeys through your voice and through this interaction. And I just want to tell you how much I appreciate that every time.
Well, thank you.
I enjoy it.
My dear, you just enjoy a spunky person.
Yes, I do. I'm quite brave to have you on here, I think. Because you always challenge me, too, in a good way. You always take me to new places, PMH, and really make me think. After you get off, I reflect on these shows because you're always taking us to new places of pondering, let's just say, and reflection. So,
well, that's what growth and learning is all about,
that.
And that's what the
it
spiritual
is.
Path is all about, really.
It
really.
Is, and I just want you to know that I appreciate you. So, and I'm always
you.
Blessed when you're here, so thank you again.
Well, big hugs to the whole audience.
Yes.
I hope you have enjoyed yourself. And if you are explorers and if you like to tread new paths, you're going to love Future Memory.
Yes,
I agree. I call it the big adventure book.
Yes.
There's all kinds of stories in there about shooting game, you know, with an elk, what we learn from that elk, all the kinds of the different ways you can enter into suspended states. Because once you enter into a suspended state, all knowledge and all information is there, and everything
yeah.
merges. That's why I could clean up that pickle juice so fast. Everything merged.
And what's so fascinating about that is how beautifully integrated that is with just regular human experience. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That
yeah,
it,
we're
it
not
appears,
talking about the mountaintop. We're talking about
were,
the kitchen.
You were cleaning your stove. And that in itself, there is a beauty to that because it's as if the whole purpose of our being here is integrated into that. You know, it's just... You know, why are we here on this planet doing these things that humans do, like clean kitchens? and there is something very profound that's how you experienced it. And so I personally plan on spending more time in your book. As I said, it was almost like, you know, when you go to the park and you know there are things that have to be done, and you're like, darn it, I want to spend more time at the park. And that's the way I feel with your book, is that I want to spend even much more time with it because it's that kind of book. It's not a book you just get from the library and then, you know, turn back or whatever. You know, it's something, I think, it's an experience, and I have seen it too. And I think it has much to share with me yet and with the audience. So thank you again, PMH. And
you're very welcome.
I hope you have I always forget what time zone you're in, but wherever you are, I hope that
you
have a peaceful rest of the day. That's right. So you're heading, well, it's still, you're heading into late afternoon.
Ahead of you.
It's quite warm there, I would imagine.
Yes, finally heated up a little bit.
Yes. Well, I hope you do enjoy the rest of your day. And once again,
I will.
Thank
and
you.
You too, and everybody else.
All right. Well,
okay. Well, bye for now.
Yeah. Bye.
I'll see
now.
You again sometime.
I hope so. I would enjoy that. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Bye. Okay. I'm just going to wrap up real quick with a few notes. And actually, I want to say something because there's a little synchronicity here. Next week, I have someone coming on the show by the name of Danyon Brinkley, who I know many of you are aware of. That is not the next show. It's actually, I've got several shows coming up, but I am going to mention it right now because on PMH's book, right on the cover, what do you think are the chances that we have a quote from Danyon Brinkley? And here's what Danyon Brinkley said about PMH's book. Quote, "A giant step forward toward achieving an expanded knowledge of simultaneous everywhere information. This book deserves to be read one page at a time." And so I find it so fascinating that a true blessing next week on Tuesday, July 30th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, Danyon Brinkley will be here live on the Frontier Beyond Fear. So mark your calendars for that. Now, before then, I have another guest coming on Friday who I know many of you enjoy. He is a returning guest. He is one of the world's top experts in mystical experiences, a professor of comparative religions. and also an author of many books. And his name is Dr. Robert Forman, and he will be talking in his continuing series of shows with me about emotional intimacy. We are going to explore this concept of intimacy with other people, and this is related to some of his work where he is creating groups where people can go deeper together, because there is tremendous joy in experiencing deeper relationships and understandings with one another. And so we're really going to explore this topic at great depth as to what is emotional intimacy, not to be confused with other types of intimacy, although those can enter into it sometimes. That's not what we're focusing on that show. And this will be Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And yes, there's quite a full schedule coming up. After Danyon next week, I also have photo detective Debbie Griggs coming up on an evening show next Thursday. Losing track of my calendar here. August 1st, she'll be on the show, another returning guest, very interesting person. We're going to do an interview format this time to talk about her journey and how she came to be a photo detective and other work that she's done. And then next Friday, I have Jim Self coming on, who hasn't been on the show in quite some time, and he's done a lot of work in the spiritual community and has a lot to share. So lots of good things coming up. If you want to learn about this show, just go to frontierbeyondfear.com. I am so very blessed by the community around the show. You can always learn about past and future shows on that site. And there is also a way to support the show if you feel so guided, as this is a listener-supported show, and I very much appreciate that if you feel led to do so. So thank you again, everyone, for being here, and I hope that you find peace on your path, wherever this show finds you or whenever it finds you in the future. Thank you again.